Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for you as usual. And we start with a pretty awful good martini, but it came out yesterday through the Congressional Budget Office report. It basically said that in addition to pretty much the same number of Americans before Obamacare that didn't have health insurance, that's how many there will be 10 years from now. Oh, and by the way, there will be the equivalent of 2.3 million fewer jobs, whether it's a result of employers eliminating jobs because they don't want to have to pay that many health care plans, or knocking people's hours down to part-time so they can avoid it that way as well. Here was the part of the tortured explanation from White House economist Jason Furman yesterday.
And labor demand, just to be clear, that is the decision that employers are making. So employers are cutting jobs because of the Affordable Care Act. That would be a bad thing, because that means somebody who really wanted a job wouldn't be able to get one. You might see the unemployment rate go up as a result of that, for example. CBO explicitly says that you're not going to see an increase in the unemployment rate, that when you see changes, it'll be that person who maybe didn't want to work those hours. They still have the option to. They still can. But in that case, maybe they'll decide they don't need to anymore.
Yeah, you'll have the flexibility of not having those pesky jobs anymore, Jim. So John Podhoretz over at the New York Post is pointing out that the reason for this is a good martini today is that if anybody's reading this soberly, there's no other way to interpret this than that this is a complete disaster.
You know, I would point out, when you say if people are reading this soberly, it is enough to drive people to drink.
Yes, it is.
Podhoretz may be a little bit on the optimistic side when he says this is a death blow to Obamacare. You know, we feel like we've heard this a lot of times over. Having said that, this is one more reason for Republicans to be running on this in 2014. And they can make a very strong argument to say, what does it do that's good? Inevitably, you know, Democrats will find someone who's getting treatment who otherwise couldn't get treatment or something like that and tout their success stories. But the scale of the problems, you know, in today's Morning Joe, I mentioned there's this one, which basically says there's like the equivalent. Now, here's the thing. It's not that 2.5 million people are going to be fired. It's that 2.5 million people who otherwise would be working won't be working. If they're part time, they'll stop working. They'll drop out of the labor force. If they are working full time, they'll be reduced down to part time. That you add up all those man hours, it comes up to 2.5 million jobs. That's bad. Whether they, you know, want to spruce it up and say, oh, you're free to live a more leisurely lifestyle or something like that. Look, Obamacare, both in terms of the incentives to companies to shift people to part-time work and now this, is basically declaring war on the 40-hour work week and making it less and less worthwhile for an employer to have somebody on the books for 40 hours a week. And now here's the incentive for the employee to not be on the books for 40 hours a week. Then you throw in the report from the Brookings Institution that says if you're in the bottom 20% of households in terms of household income, the good news is Obamacare will help you. You will end up with better, you know, circumstances, with more, you know, better take-home pay. And the problem is this is the cutoff at $21,000 a year. If you make more than that, you will be having less in terms of take-home pay because of the changes brought through from Obamacare. This is from the Brookings Institution. This is not, you know, you can't say this is a bunch of crazy nut right-wing nut jobs or something like that. So it's bad for the total number of hours worked. People are losing their insurance from their regular plans. Premiums are going higher for a whole bunch of folks. You add up, there are more people who are going to be unhappy with this than happy with this. And I think that adds up to a much stronger coalition for repeal, or at the very least drastic overhaul and, you know, ripping up large chunks of this thing than there is for keeping it the way it is.
On to martini number two now, Jim. And of course, the president has made a big deal over the last few weeks of the fact that he's got his pen, he's got his phone. And while he hopes Congress will do what he wants, he's not waiting for them to do it. He's just going to act wherever he can. And this is from the Daily Caller. Democratic Representative Sheila Jackson Lee said that the new Congressional Full Employment Caucus will, quote, give President Obama a number of executive orders that he can sign, adding that writing up executive orders should be our number one agenda. She says, in fact, I think that should be our number one agenda. Let's write up these executive orders, draft them, of course, and ask the president to stand with us on full employment. Jim, it's always interesting to watch people gleefully abdicate their power and their responsibility given to them by the Constitution.
Well, what we've now seen here is not just the usual, you know, imperial presidency and anything we can't get through legislature, well, we're just going to do through an executive order. But now, think about it. Now, an executive orders aren't just for presidents anymore. You can now do it if you're a member of Congress. At least you can request it if you're a member of Congress. So now what it is that if you're a member of the House minority, this is a way of invalidating the House elections by saying, you know, Sheila Jackson Lee, through the imperial presidency and the executive order process, can make changes to law that otherwise you'd require a House majority to enact. And so there are a bunch of us who've kind of been arguing, like, look, I encounter folks on the right who like to say, you know, we need to get back to the Constitution. We need to, you know, emphasize to America this is unconstitutional. The first problem is there are large chunks of Americans who don't know what the Constitution is. I mean, they know what it is, but they don't understand it. They don't understand the principles. Think about how often you see the words unconstitutional and bad used as synonyms. There are a lot of things that are bad in American life that are perfectly legal. Okay, you see the effort to restrict things like hate speech or something like that. You know, the Constitution was there to limit government power. And we're in an era where large chunks of people don't understand the concept that government doesn't have to solve every problem. It shouldn't try to solve every problem. It tends to create new problems when it tries to solve problems. And, you know, these things are better addressed by Burkean platoons, you know, these little groups of community, you know, there's non-governmental solutions for societal problems. People don't get that anymore. And so in light of this, Sheila Jackson Lee, not surprising to see her being the strongest advocate of this idea of if I want it, it should happen, entirely separate from what the Constitution says or what the law says or whether there's a legislative majority for this thing. It's very, very dangerous. The only good news we can think of is, boy, imagine what a, you know, imagine what a Republican president can do with this kind of power.
Well, I'm sure it'll be the most horrific idea in American history. If
then we'll be worried about the imperial presidency again. Yes. Then it'll be, you know, bad.
All right, on to the crazy martini now. And as most of you know, I believe the opening ceremonies for the Winter Olympics in Sochi, Russia are this coming Friday. Some of the events will begin on Thursday. There are some problems. At first, they didn't think they would have enough snow, but they managed to manufacture enough of that. But that's just the tip of the iceberg here. Organizers admitting, despite 7 years knowing that they had these games, that 3 of the 9 media hotels not completed. One reporter, the Guardian's Moscow bureau chief, was told his room is still under construction, and they are literally finishing the keys right now. The Chicago Tribune reporter says her hotel has no water, and the front desk says even if it comes back on, don't use it on your face because it contains something very dangerous. Oh, and Richard Engel of NBC says don't ever connect to a Wi-Fi network if you're in Sochi because you will be hacked. It's not if, it will happen. So, good times.
You kind of knew that this was going to be a mess, that Putin was going to use this for propaganda. You know, like, we went through a lot of this in China a couple of years back in 2008. And, you know, the idea is, well, look, by putting the games to China, we'll improve their human rights record. And that really didn't happen at all. The whole idea of, oh, the games help restore international unity and brotherhood and all that stuff. You do remember that Russia invaded Georgia during the opening ceremonies, right? You know, must have put some bad blood between those athletes of, oh, hey, you know, back home, your guys are killing our guys. I've never liked this notion of the, you know, kumbaya mentality of it. I never liked the idea of giving the Olympics to brutal regimes. And I think, you know, Russia increasingly hits that. We've talked about it probably in past martinis, the serious security worries about the idea of the Chechens or other Islamists or other guys trying to blow up stuff. They've already had bombings elsewhere in Russia. They're not too far from Chechnya, and that's obviously been a hotbed of violence for a really long time. The invasion of privacy, the fact that Russian thugs are beating up gays because the country is vehemently anti-gay. I mean, you can go down the list. It's just a mess. And each day there's some new problem in this case. And obviously you're seeing, you know, massive hacking. Apparently the latest thing I saw was that the Russian mob may have hacked into the cell phone towers. So anything you send via your cell phone, they are going to have access to. That means bank accounts and all that jazz. So you can imagine, you know, major cyber crime coming out of this Olympics. We're going to watch these Olympics with bated breath, hoping that nothing goes wrong, hoping that it's actually a glorious moment. Everybody gets to enjoy it as opposed to the mismanaged, corrupt, brutal, just overall depressing celebration of Putin's imperial power that it's been so far. I was kind of surprised the other day, Greg, when it turned out Chuck Hagel said that the U.S. does have plans to get Americans out of Sochi if things go wrong.
Good.
Have, It's good to know. Having said that, I don't remember them ever announcing that they had plans to do this before any other Olympics before.
True.
And I'm trying to imagine like a scenario, like, you know, chemical attacks. Are you thinking, you know, like, I mean, the idea that we basically have plans made up to evacuate our people if necessary. Between that, comments from the FBI saying that the Russians aren't necessarily listening to them on counterterrorism suggestions and things like that, I have seen more signals from the U.S. government that some might see as a bit of, butt covering, a bit of, you know, look, we gave them advice. We told them how to deal with this. I have no secret sources on this or anything like that, but I just can't help but suspect there are a lot of people in the U.S. government who think something very bad is going to happen in Sochi. So knocking on wood, hopefully nothing happens. But in retrospect, the International Olympic Committee really needs to have its head examined, because I think after this, they're heading to Rio de Janeiro, which last I checked was like a Grand Theft Auto game. In real life, with, you know, gangs and violence, and my understanding is the gang shot a police helicopter out of the sky, stuff like that. So I understand Damascus, Pyongyang, and Mogadishu are other hot pot contenders for the next Summer Olympic Games after that.
You led right into one of my final points. First of all, I don't remember even the Salt Lake Olympics, just months after 9/11, having people this concerned about the security and the potential of a terrorist attack there. Secondly, what are the odds that Putin brings Bashar Assad to his box for the opening ceremonies?
Oh, very good. I understand those. That Syrian team's a killer.
Yeah, Syrian in the Winter Olympics. They're always
the biathlon. You know, they're actually the snipers are pretty good. You know?
Oh, gee. Wow. Well,
on that cheery note, America.
All right, Jim. Have a great day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today, and please be sure to join us again on Thursday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.